Okay.
All right, so when you start a show, it's the beginning of how we become professional.
I just nerdy, the show hosted by two hilarious dads who bring their unique blend of wit, wisdom, and nerdiness to the airwaves. From sharing hilarious anecdotes about their own experiences to giving advice on navigating the ups and downs of life, these two dads have got you covered. But that's not all. They're also obsessed with all things nerdy, from comic books and sci-fi movies to video and board games. So whether you're a fellow dad, a pop culture fanatic, or just in need of a good laugh, this is Wise and Nerdy. And now let's have some fun.
Do it again.
Start the game already!
Oh, Kurt. Yes. You can either be the, if we fire Mike, right? If we fire Mike,
yes,
then we no longer have, dang it, what's the stupid thing you have to hire? Diversity hire. We no longer have a diversity hire because he's had a stroke and he's half a moron.
You haven't had a stroke,
so if we fire, no. If we fire Mike, that makes you the diversity hire, Kurt. So, I mean, you might want to think long and hard before we fire Mike on this show.
That's like what Kung Fu Panda looks like when they're sticking the needles in him.
Oh, hey, everybody. You're welcome for me to bring in Stephen Adams last week, because these two morons got one joke. They have one joke, and that was to not tell the jokes. And that one joke did okay. But you're welcome for Stephen Adams for carrying the show. So there you go.
Yeah, he was fun.
He seemed to have a really good time. He seemed to enjoy being on. You guys have fun with him?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's an unknown guy, right?
I mean,
like we've known him from Dragon Con, and he's just a good guy.
It's made him a good fit there. So, Joe, what's the question of the week, man?
I can't answer you. You got a button to push.
It's the question.
Roll that dice.
Make up your mind, Kurt. Which one is it?
What TV series have you watched from beginning to end multiple times?
Oh, that's a good one.
I have two.
And we have a speak pipe for it too.
That's right. I've
got multiple.
All right, I got to figure out which speak pipe it is because I didn't label them. I just loaded them, and they're all dated. But I can find out from the date, so give me a minute. But
Call your daddy.
Well, people did.
It should be number 400 if they have the numbers on them.
No,
okay. All right.
How about you talk about the series? I'll look.
Okay. I've actually watched quite a few series multiple times.
Me too.
Especially anime, because a lot of those only get one season anyway, and so they're only like 12 episodes long, so watching those multiple times all the way through is a piece of cake. Like there's one anime called Death March to a Parallel World Rhapsody that I've watched multiple times. And so in that anime, a death march is a coding thing where you stay until the project is done. And so
that was my life for years.
Right. And so it starts off with him working on a couple of different projects that he's coding, a couple of different games. And he ends up falling asleep and wakes up in a world that's an amalgamation of the two games that he was working on. And he can pull up the like menu and everything like that just by thinking about it. And he's noticed that the opening scenario is the one that he literally had just coded to fix a problem with the game, that because people were saying that, look, it's too hard, or look, it's too easy. He's like, okay, well, they can do this optional quest, and then for the people that want it to be easy, there you go, it's easier. For those that don't want the optional quest and want it to be harder, they can skip it. And so
kind of like the segment.
Yeah. And so he he does the optional quest because if he doesn't, he's likely to get killed. And he ends up going from level 1 to like 310 right off the bat. And so he's like the most powerful person in the entire world. And he tries to hide it.
What's the name of that one?
Death March to a Parallel World Rhapsody.
Okay. I was trying to look for some new anime for Zoe and I to watch together. And Leveling by Myself was one of them that looked kind of funny.
Solo Leveling?
Yeah, I think that's what it's called, yeah.
I think Kurt lost his internet. He just completely dropped out. Yeah, Solo Leveling is good. It's a bit dark and gritty, but it I like it. I talked about that last week.
It's not part of the question.
While you were gone.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Well, I will talk about the two series I've watched. Both are live action. Now, when I say all the way through multiple times, one of them kind of counts. The other one does count. So the one that kind of counts is Doctor Who. I watched from the new 2000 reboot, right? I watched that entire series up through Peter Capaldi probably two or three times. Definitely the David Tennant era. I've watched that a lot. I still cannot watch the episode where it's the maestro at the end and there's knocking. And yeah, Kurt's back. So
I don't know what happened.
Hulk smashed.
I never actually watched Doctor Who. So, you know.
But anyway, there's this episode where David Tennant is going to transition. And when you hear the knock on the box after everything ended, I've watched it so many times. And it still gets me. But the series I've watched multiple times over and over again is Supernatural. Is every time I find somebody who hasn't watched it that I'm near or next to or whatever, like, oh, and I start watching it with them and I eat it up. I just love that show. What about you, Kurt?
Yeah, so it's been a bunch. But the geek show would be Star Trek Next Generation, but I'm going to go West Wing.
All right.
I've watched that multiple times because the writing is just so good. And it really was kind of like Aaron Sorkin in his prime. And
did you watch The Newsroom?
Yes.
I think that really was his prime.
I loved that.
It was so good.
But I still like West Wing better. I will watch pretty much anything Aaron Sorkin did. But West Wing, I think I started watching it because Martin Sheen was the president, but he was from New Hampshire. And I went, okay, I like him as an actor. And you know, yeah, it's got New Hampshire roots. Cool. And then it morphed into the president had MS, which related to me because my wife has MS. And then again, the writing was just fantastic. John Goodman was the president for a little while, and he was fantastic as it. It was just a lot of great writing, And there was even a death in the show. One of the actors actually died, and they made him die in the show, and they had like a giant tribute to him in the show, and it was fantastic. So there was that, and Next Gen is just, you know, it's that kind of is my Star Trek.
Did you watch
much of a sacrilege as it may be to say?
No, I get you. I mean, everybody has their own, right? Did you watch The Orville?
Yeah, I love The Orville.
Right, because that gives off modern Star Next Generation vibes. I mean, it just captured that heart with, of course, you know, slapstick humor and stuff on top of it. But
well, and it actually got better as the seasons went on too.
Oh yeah. So, just like Next Generation did.
Just like Next Generation season one is a rough watch.
I forgot Ooh. What Farpoint Station, how bad Ooh. That was.
It's not just that. Like the episode where Tasha Yar dies,
yeah.
She's eaten by the giant hefty bag. It's not good. It's just, yeah.
giant hefty bag.
That's what the special effects look like.
Yeah.
Wait.
Joseph?
Yeah.
Have you not seen SNG?
not from start to finish, but I've watched a lot of the episodes.
Kurt, I'm glad you're back.
Yeah.
You know, because this is too much. I haven't seen Doctor Who. I haven't seen.
Oh, all right, cool.
I haven't seen Star Trek.
Uno reverse card.
How much? Oh my God! How much crap have you not seen? That really is defining of our generation, and you know the boomer with this too.
You know, not for nothing, but yeah, though I am much grayer than you guys. technically, I'm a Gen Xer. So
anyhow, wise and curdy.
Nice. Thank you, random kid. I will say that when somebody says, I haven't seen it from start to finish, but I've watched a lot of them, that is, as the kids say, sus.
Okay. I've never owned the series, and I used to catch reruns all the time.
You could not
on the TVs. In the
early 2000s, there's no way you could not catch the series reruns. They were on every other cable channel.
And there were like 783 episodes.
Yeah.
And by a lot of them, it's probably about half of them.
Yeah. So there are some amazingly standout episodes. And honestly, to this day, my favorite Star Trek episode from all the series is called The Inner Light. And it's the one where Picard gets hit by a beam
from
a satellite,
yep,
and ends up living a full life.
What was his name?
Because somebody else.
It became a big thing. I forget now. It's like a trivia question, and if I hear it, I know what it is. But I can't think
absolutely.
It,
yeah. And he learns how to play this little pan flute.
Yes,
but he lives out a life, has a wife and kids and grandkids. And then the beam disconnects and he's back on the starship and he's lived in essence like 40 or 50 years.
Yeah.
He has a son, right? Because the son pops up again because he's like, my son is gone type of thing.
Yep.
So good for you looking at Wikipedia, buddy. You're trying.
No.
You're
trying. So I looked up the name from Wikipedia, but I remembered that the son popped up because it was emotional damage that he dealt with
later in the series. Damage.
It came up several times.
Well, and that flute is in the background in several episodes still. It's just such a good episode. And he doesn't take it for granted that he was able to live the whole lifetime of this person. And the whole reason it happened was this planet knew it was going to die and they had to preserve the memories. And so they offloaded to him.
Yeah.
So he kept the whole history of the planet basically through this one person in his head. And it was really, really creative writing at the time. So I don't know. I have a soft spot for Next Gen a lot.
Between that and becoming a Borg, I mean, he's got all kinds of mental issues, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's not good. Finish that. Sorry.
All I was going to say is because you brought up the Orville.
Yes.
And so the Orville is actually better Star Trek than Star Trek Discovery, which came out at the same time as the Orville.
Yeah.
But Star Trek Discovery was better sci-fi than most Star Trek.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree
with that. It's just not as Star Trek-y.
I've only seen a few episodes of the Orville. I dropped it a long time ago.
So good. It's so good.
All right. We're gonna play this clip so I can rinse my brain out from the evilness that is Joe.
Yep.
But hold on real quick. The Galaxy Quest, fantastic movie.
It is a fantastic movie. Not the best Star Trek movie, but fantastic movie.
Hello, it is Mrs. Underscore. Mr. Underscore asked me like a month or two ago to do this speak pipe, so I figured it was time. So what I was asked about shows that I could watch over and over and over again. And it really depends on what you're asking about. Genre, mood, all of those things. If you're asking me about an animated series, hands down, Nickelodeon, Avatar The Last Airbender, Chef's Kiss, it's amazing. I can watch that anytime. If I'm needing a comfort show, I'm going to turn on the Great British Baking Show. Don't judge me. It is one of my comfort shows that I can turn on. Yep. I can still relive all of my emotions from watching it the first time. All of that jazz. It's one of my favorites. If I'm needing a sitcom, I need to laugh. I'm going to go for something like Psych or The Office, Community, The IT Crowd, something fun that I can just have a 30-minute laugh.
See, she watches good stuff, Joe. I don't know why she married you.
That way, it just kind of brightens my mood. But there's lots of different series that I've watched completely, and I can completely watch over again. If I'm on a true crime binge and I don't really want to watch a actual true crime thing, I can watch Bones, which is one of my favorite TV crime series. I think that covers basically all of it. Again, there's many more series, but in general, those are my top ones in those general genres. So there you go.
Hadn't thought about the IT Crowd, but I've watched that multiple times too.
Yeah. Miranda.
It's only three seasons, right? It's only three seasons, and they're pretty short seasons. So
you guys seriously need to check out Miranda. It's a three-season series from the BBC, probably back in the early 2000s. Miranda Hart wrote it and starred in it, and it is phenomenal.
So it's not Miranda, that creepy kid from YouTube and stuff.
Roll that dice.
Oh,
what are you nerding out about now?
Well, let me ask you guys a quick question before we go into our actual things we're nerding out about. Was there a different, more anime version of Avatar: The Last Airbender than what you can currently stream from Nickelodeon? Because I was starting to show Zoe the other night, the series, and I was like, I don't remember it starting this way. Like, it literally came out, and Sokka and Kira are on the ice, and then the next thing you know, they're over there popping Aang out and all this stuff. And I'm like, I thought there was more to it then. Hold on.
Stop mispronouncing those names. You're going to cause people to have some serious.
Everybody knows it's Aang.
It's Amy. I don't care. So, hold on. So, I watched the first episode of the new live action, and that's how I remember watching it start before. So, am I misremembering something? Is there something different?
You're very much misremembering it.
Because I know that history, like what they went through in that.
The history that they start with in the live action one. Uh-huh. And I put that as one of my things. So we can talk about this.
Okay, cool.
The history that they put at the beginning of the live action stuff, it covers that later in the animated series.
Okay, that's why I was remembering it. All right.
So
I have watched the Airbender all the way through.
Yeah. The animated stuff, it covers that more in flashbacks and exposition later. So it jumps straight into the story from them finding Aang in the iceberg. I mean, the first episode is literally called Boy in the Iceberg. But yes, it's from a storytelling perspective, the live action one mixed things around, although they made it more chronological when they mixed it around. Although if they don't do more flashback and exposition, they're going to lose out on a lot of the story. I've only watched about half of it so far. I am liking what I see. I think my biggest criticism is they have gone a bit too dark with it. And I think that's what a lot of studios are doing in general, is they're going darker with stuff. They're like, oh, we got a Game of Thrones, this thing. Well, no, Avatar is supposed to be a lot more lighthearted most of the time. And when it gets serious, that's when you're like, ooh, this is a huge tonal shift.
You mean it has impact when it changes tone?
Yeah. And so that's my biggest criticism so far. And again, I've only watched about half of it so far because I'm trying to watch it with my kids. If I was watching it by myself, I would already be done. But I'm watching it with my wife and kids, so we're going through it a lot slower than I would normally. But yeah, they need more fun in it.
That's why I hated more the humor. M. Night version.
Well, so this version has more humor than the M. Night one. The M. Night one completely was devoid
right.
of anything humorous.
Right.
But
I
this
do
one,
feel like
one,
they're doing the brother a little too stiff.
Yes,
he's in the first episode. He's a little too. He should have been more over the top in the delivery of the irritation and anger like they animated in originally, I think.
Yeah, they've toned down his humor. They've toned yeah. down his sarcasm.
Yeah.
He's not as angry, down,
which is yeah, fine, but.
Yeah. They've just toned down his emotions, yeah, in general. But yeah, so far, I'm liking it. I just wish that the tonal shift wasn't as much. But other than that, it's way, 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 way better than the M. Night Shyamalan one.
Okay, good. Because I actually only got about halfway through the first episode, got distracted, had to do something else, and I haven't made my way back to it because I got distracted by another show on Netflix.
Well, and like, I guess spoiler alert for the first episode briefly, but like they literally show them torching people. Like
yeah.
It's a lot darker than
I kind of liked it, to be honest.
Well, and
if it's for older kids, like teens and college kids, right? Or if it's for us as nostalgia, I like it. I get it if it's like supposed to be more similar to the original, which was for kids more or less. But I mean, it's kind of, I don't know. I even raised my kids to go, well, if they get hit with, it's like stormtroopers, you get hit with a laser, you should have a big burn hole in your chest, not a smudge mark on your armor. You know, I don't know. Sorry.
No, yeah. It's good. I do have my there and overall they're relatively small critiques. We'll see how the series goes as a whole. I do like that they've got a ton of musical cues from the original series. Like they bring in Leaves from the Vine at one point when they're talking about some of the backstory. And those that know what Leaves from the Vine is and know the backstory, they're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. But it just that the animated version, and maybe it's nostalgia speaking, the animated version reaches me more on an emotional level than the live action one does.
If it's setting the wrong tone from the beginning, that makes sense. Like yeah. it, because those tonal shifts have to have impact. And if everything's dark and gloomy and serious the whole time, you feel nothing because nothing changes. Right. Yeah. I mean, Justice League, DCU.
I watched Aquaman 2 last night. It's not on my nerding out list.
I watched it too.
Yeah, I know. Right? It
was fine.
It was fine. They blew their budget on cocaine and hookers because they didn't put it in graphics. Tell you that. Anyway, that's not what I'm nerding out about. But so Joe, you are also, you put in the thing about being a proofreader.
Yeah, so I think I've mentioned him before, but my wife's cousin is an author, and I've got several of his books and I've read them. And on his Facebook page, he was asking for people to come in, and he needed more proofreaders and beta readers for a new book that he's working on, unrelated to the previous series. And so my wife and I, we signed up to be proofreaders. He's only got the first, I think he's got 5 chapters out, and he said he's going to have the next 5 shortly. But it's been an interesting experience to see how he goes about it. And I guarantee that many authors have a whole bunch of different ways. But he's got a Facebook group, and he opens up the chapters in a Google Doc, and you can go in and suggest edits to it. And so I've gone through, I've only read the first couple of chapters so far, but, yeah, I've made a lot of recommendations for little changes here and there. Mostly it's like, this is awkward phrasing. You might want to mix it up, or this is spelled wrong. This word is actually one word, not two words, you know, things like that. But he's been really responsive in making those suggestions and taking those in and fixing the different segments. And so it's been an interesting experience just to see that. And I know that his path to being an author is atypical, because what he does is he prints it digitally first through, I think it's through Amazon. And then once it's made enough money, he orders the physical prints and sells it through Amazon.
Interesting.
And okay. So generally the digital copy comes out about 6 months, 3 to 6 months before the physical copies get printed and go on sale. Hmm. So
kind of like that idea.
Yeah, that's what he's been. That's how he's been releasing his books. And he's got, I've read three of his books. I want to say he has four, though. And this new one is going to be like a sci-fi magic mix, I think, is what he's going for. Hmm. So whereas his other ones have been urban fantasy.
Urban fantasy. Interesting.
Yeah, it's all about Carl and what he dreams about.
Yep. It's all Carl urban fanfic.
As far as I can tell, quote unquote, urban fantasy is just fantasy nowadays. Like it's Earth in current present time Earth. So like the other books that I've read are about a kid who is a druid in Utah. And there's vampires and monsters and all kinds of other stuff.
Oh my.
Yes. It's not a half bad read. I've actually read the series through twice. So.
Huh. Yeah. So
cool.
Kurt.
Yes.
Are you all caught up on Demon Slayer?
Oh yeah.
Joe?
Yeah.
You all caught up on Demon Slayer?
Yeah.
Audience, are you all caught up on Demon Slayer?
Liars! No, you're not, sirs.
Yes, a new movie. No, you're not.
Well, but it's not a new movie, though.
It's not a new movie. It's the first episode of the new season. It is so good.
No.
To the Hashira training. It shows.
I thought what was being shown in the theaters was kind of like the train thing where they mashed a bunch of the episodes together to make a movie.
That's exactly what it is. And the
No. This is my nerding out. Fools, shut the. I turned this car around. Look, no. All right, stop. I want to see it. You guys did. This is my nerding out.
Just 25 cents a day, you can support a rock god.
So it popped up on our AMC app. I went and checked it out. So I wanted to see if it was one of those. So the last one we went to see was a Fathom event. I had to pay $15 a person or whatever, but it was the festival that they have that is live action reading of the thing with amazing stuff on the stage. It's a beautiful thing, but it was not that. It is a summary, more or less, with some extra scenes, if you will, of the final episode of the last season of the Swordsmith Village arc, which you guys saw. And so it starts with those final battles, gives you a little bit of extra, I guess, stuff that they left on the cutting room floor, and then, you know, finishes that episode out. So it's basically the whole episode. They don't change anything story-wise, but they change up a few little, like I said, extra scenes or took something out there, skipped a little something here. Then it goes into the first episode of the next season of To the Hashira Training. And it's good. That's all I'm going to say. It's really good. And they redeemed themselves from that crap hole arc, the Swordsmith Village, where they took out my boy Nosuke. Nosuke's back. He's back in big time fashion. And it's so good.
Just rolls his eyes.
And it's everybody so good.
Everybody needs a break from Nosuke.
Well, you got your break. He's back now. So, I mean, here's the thing.
I actually like him as a character. I just can't handle the over the top crap all the time.
You might like it here, because I think they
and honestly, I actually would have gone to the theater to see it, because it was playing up here too, Had I known they were going to show new stuff, it was not clear that they were going to be showing anything but the season that just finished.
Oh, no, no. This is the new season.
But that's not that's not what it sounded like.
So just like the train arc, how they did, they actually did a movie for the train arc first, and then they split it up into the season.
But I didn't know that because I just finished watching the whole.
Well, I thought it. So I thought it might have been like the train. I was kind of hoping to be like the train arc where we got the whole season. We would have sat through it and watched it, but. It's going to be a real season.
That was my understanding, was that's what it was going to be, where the movie is the season and then they're going to split it up. They're going to add more and split it up into the different episodes starting in April, because the new season starts in April.
Yeah. Right. So no, this is the first. So the way AFC described it was exactly the way I just started, that it'll be the last episode from last season and the first episode of this one. And it absolutely was. They debuted the new theme song and the intro video, and then you watch the whole episode. Then it did the music video end, like always. And it was about 40-ish minutes for that episode. So I think the whole thing was said and done in about an hour and a half, give or take.
Okay.
So, yeah. But it was very fun, very cool. It's still in theaters, I think, around places. I think if you can get in for less than $10, it's worth it. If your area is charging more than that, honestly, if you can get a matinee for like $5, it's really worth it. It's a lot of fun. I was surprised at how full the theater was here, because my local theater, it doesn't at all. It really only hits at most two episodes, but I really felt like it was one. It's going to be interesting. So, all right. So that's that. So check it out. It is coming. I didn't know it's coming in April, which would have been nice for them to say on the screen, but there you go. It's coming in April, which we're looking forward to it. The other thing, TikTok made me buy it. And let me tell you, the nerds out there are going to love it. And I just don't tase me, bro. I don't want to hear the concerns of privacy invasion. I really don't, because I love this thing. It's called Plaud, P-L-A-U-D, and I kept seeing it on TikTok shops and this and that, and it's all about how it records, and then AI, powered by ChatGPT, AI turns it into notes, and I'm like, I need that. I'm always talking, and people are twisting my words, or I forgot some things I said I was going to do because I was driving or something else, didn't write it down. This thing is from China, so yeah. All right. Georgia's a one-party state, like Joe pointed out last week to Steven. Tennessee's a one-party state, too. But in all honesty, I can get it. It's about the size of a credit card. It's not very obvious what it does. So I could definitely see there might be some whatever. Just know that we're living in the future, and everybody's recording everything all the time. All the time. All right. But this thing works flawlessly. I can put it on the table and it records conversations. And I'll go in and say, you know, make this like an interview. And it, within a couple of minutes, 3 to 5 minutes at most, it transcribes it. An hour of audio, 3 to 5 minutes, transcribes it nearly perfectly. Now, it doesn't say speaker one or speaker two, he or her. It just kind of runs it all together. Or if it's a phone call, it'll say the other person or something like that. It does really well. The audio quality is crap, but the
transcribing, he likes
it. It records it right on the little device. Now, you do connect it to your phone, and if it's close to your phone, it's automatically recorded like through Bluetooth to your phone. But I've had it a few times without my phone and turn it on, and then it has to load it to the phone, like sync it in.
Linus Tech Tips has talked about a similar thing. I don't think it was called Plaud, but I think there's probably multiple people doing the same thing, to be honest. And yeah, he was saying that he was very interested in it because like opening up recording on your phone directly onto your phone is like stupid hard for a lot of different things. And so having this extra device, whereas that should be easy. Like recording a phone call on your phone should be relatively easy, but I assume for legal reasons is why phones don't have it in there to do that.
Well, I don't know. On my iPhone 15, it's got the little button that used to be an on off mute button, but now it's just a push button that you can assign things to. I assign voice memo to that. So if I hold that button down for like 2 seconds, it automatically opens up voice memo records, but that's still kind of clunky. I mean, if you want to be secretive, you can be secretive, but really, I thought you were saying
it was two-party recording, Charles.
What was?
Yeah, this is the devices. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And so
you mean like on a phone call? You're right. No. You're right. Sorry. You're right, Kurt. I was thinking mostly what I've used it for is open meetings. Like I just hold on. The other day I had to have a lot of interviews in my company because I'm restructuring some things because we're growing again. I'm opening up a new base and all this other stuff. And so, and they knew it was there. And everybody's curious. I told them about it. But it just recorded. And I'm turning those notes into meeting notes to then copy them, paste them into official ChatGPT, because this is one of those special nuggets, right? That they're not called nuggets, but that it specializes in record it and translate it and doesn't try to do all this other stuff that ChatGPT does. So anyway, I want to take the notes and say, give me a job description based off of this conversation. And it's going to really help refine what I'm doing. But yes, there's another little switch. It does. I don't have it on here because none of my cases are MagSafe, but it'll attach to a MagSafe case like a little wallet credit card holder. And like I said, this thing's as thick as maybe two credit cards, maybe three at the most. But with the switch flipped up, anytime you want to record, you just hold the button for a second and it vibrates and it's recording. When it's attached to your phone, and actually I was thinking about putting it on my headphone if I could to record this with us for it to do like transcript of our show, right?
Yeah.
It's now when I say crystal clear, I mean, the audio is still not great, but there's some kind of induction mic in it because my voice, and like I called my wife to test it out, and her voice were equal in the recording and super clear, and it translated it into notes very well.
I'd like you to send me a sample of that audio.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Doesn't need to be more than 30 seconds because I want to try it with a tool that I use to clean up my audio. Because I think it'll be better than you think.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that will be a topic of what I'm nerding out about, but just not this week.
Because this week you're nerding about turning 75 and life gets hard.
Yep. That's exactly right. So last year, before I joined the podcast, I did a program called 75 Hard, which is not a fitness program. It's not a weight loss program. It's a discipline program, for lack of a better term. And you have 75 days where you have to do specific, five items a day you have to do every day. And if you miss one, then you have to start over from day one, regardless of how far in you are. So, for people wondering, the things that you have to do are you have to work out twice a day, and one of those days needs to be outside, and each workout needs to be at least 45 minutes. And workout outside means it doesn't matter if it's raining or snowing or whatever. You have to be outside for 45 minutes to do this workout. You can do whatever kind of workout you want, but you have to do one of those workouts outdoors. You have to drink a gallon of water a day. You have to read 10 pages from a nonfiction, preferably self-help book every day. You have to maintain a diet every day. You just can't go off of it, and no alcohol for the entire 75 days. Well, and I drink alcohol, but for something like I'm, it's not a big deal.
It's really not a big deal. On patreon.com/wise_and_nerdy, there's a Scott Skatier level that if you don't want to do 75 hard, but you'd like to give us 75, I got you. I'll get you a drink live whenever we meet in life. Now back to Kurt.
It's one of those things where I have. So I'm going on a cruise at the end of May. Starting tomorrow allows me to complete this before I go on the cruise, which is not a big deal one way or another, because I would do it anyway. I was doing 75 hard at the last Dragon Con.
I know. This is not your third time?
This will be my third time starting it. I finished it once. I did not finish it the second time.
And didn't you start it right after the first one?
I did. Yeah. That was the problem. Yeah. I started like literally 3 days after.
Oof.
And I should have waited. But yeah, it's and you have to take a progress pic every day. Which I take progress pictures now as a matter of course. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting, but I'm looking forward to it in a really twisted way. Like I'm kind of excited to wake up tomorrow and get going.
Nice.
I don't know why. It doesn't seem to make sense, but it's just another thing that I'm doing. And I've been going to the gym more now, so it's just going to fit right in with everything. So
that's a lot.
It is, but you know,
I mean, good on you.
Roll that dice.
Let daddy decide.
Which is, how do I? And this is one that you brought.
Yeah, so there's a little article before we say the how do I part. There's a little thing off of Reddit I found that I thought was something we'd talk about at some point, and this is that point. So this is from Little Ease on Reddit. Under r/dad, and it says, I hear this phrase echoed often, or you're such a good dad is the quote. I hear this phrase echoed often when I take my young toddler and infant to either run errands or hang out at the coffee shop on a Saturday morning. Yet I don't feel like a good dad. I feel tormented by my own demons, my own personal struggles. By outward appearances, I look passable as a father figure. Internally, I am conflicted, wrestling in my own head. I look present with my children, but my headspace is in another dimension. I want to be so much more for my children, my wife, and my family, but I'm struggling to fix myself. So I bring in the how do I feel like a good dad?
There's so many nuances to that question, because there's a lot of people that feel like a good dad that are bad dads, you know. You know,
and there's also good dads who feel bad.
Yeah, and so a lot of that is personal perception of yourself, whether or not. So it's, I guess it's first you have to come to terms with you and know who you are, and then have a realization, I guess, or. You have to put forth your best effort and realize that you're putting forth your best effort. Regardless of what other people are doing, you can only do your best. And if you are doing your best for your kids, you are a good dad. If you are putting forth your best, that's as much as anyone can ask of you is for you to put forth your best.
Okay. Sometimes people's best is still hurting kids and
they, so you're not wrong. And in my opinion, that's a lot what marriage is for. And I feel sorry for anyone who's a single parent, because it's hard. Because when you're having an off day, at least this is how it works in my marriage. When I'm having an off day, my wife helps pick up the slack. When I'm having when she's having an off day, I help pick up the slack for her.
And you're a liar. She never has an off day. Kelsey, you hear that? He's saying you're crap. I stood up for you.
And so it's anyone who looks at marriage as a 50-50 is doing it wrong.
Well, go back to the daddy thing, though. There's still people who weren't raised. Wrong. I would say, and Kurt, I want to hear your thoughts on this. It's three somewhat different generational takes on age of our kids, not necessarily generational, but I think the first thing to becoming a good dad is understanding no matter how good you are, you're going to mess your kids up. You're going to mess something up because you're still learning as a person. And if you come to terms with, similar to what Joe was saying, that I'm going to be self-aware and notice when I mess my kids up or do something to hurt them, and then work to teach them from it and grow, I think that's a big step to understanding that being a father is a lot more than how you feel inside and how you take them to the park. What do you think, Kurt? What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, I think we're only truly ever honest with ourselves. You know, I generally speaking, I mean, there are some exceptions, but I think that in your heart, you know whether or not you've done right that day. As a dad, as a person, whatever, you know, however that works out. But I also think that there's a couple of things that we don't like to talk about because we shouldn't be validated by this, but it doesn't matter because it's true. When we get outside validation, that gives a positive spin on our kids. That is somewhat validating that you've done right by them. In the moment, not as a whole, but in the moment.
Sure. Right? Yes.
And I've had people come up and say, man, your kids are so well behaved. At which point I could go at that moment, I could go, thank you very much, and feel validated that I did something right at that point. Now, the problem with you're such a good, how to feel like a good dad is I don't believe it's easy to know that in the moment because you're just doing what you like at any given moment, you're doing what you think is right in the moment.
And if you think about it,
you might have a time to think about it, but you don't know what the outcome's really going to be until much, much later.
Well, no, I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about if you think about the decisions you're making, most people, my father included, just kind of did things and just didn't think about, well, let me choose a moment. Let me use my words. Let me see what's going to be the outcome here. It's very,
very
much
situational. Just right? Flowing there through. There are times where you can take that step back.
Which the guy who wrote this statement sounds like he was there. But, like, I'm always in my own head type of dealing with demons.
Yeah. But I think that, honestly, I can look back now and think that I was a pretty good dad. I'm not going to say I'm the best dad. That's craziness.
That's me.
But okay. So we have different definitions. That's okay. But what I can do at this age now and with two grown adult kids and, you know, with a grandchild and another one on the way.
Yeah.
Congratulations. There you go.
Thank you. And not that I really did anything, but but I can look at them more objectively now, each individual kid, and go, you know what? Did a pretty good job. And at the end of the day, I think if you can look at your kids and say, you know what? I think I did a pretty good job. Then that's good. That's just, I think that's some objective self evaluation where you can go, look, it's not all me, but I had a part in it. So I think I did a pretty good job. They're good people. And I don't know. Do we want more than that for our kids than to be good people? Really? At the end of the day?
Right.
Yeah, we want material things for them, and we want them to have a good job, make a good life, and be supportive and all of that. But at the end of the day, if I can be proud of my kids because they're good people, that's enough.
Yeah. I'm with you. To the guy who wrote it, a lot of that resonated with me as a young father. And the first thing I do is let go. I know how dumb it sounds, but it's the hardest things are the things that make it work. Is you got to let go of all the crap you thought you knew about being a parent and understand what I think Joe and Kurt have verbalized in their own ways. Nobody knows what they're doing. Everybody's doing the best they can with what they got. And
well, and even from child to child.
Yeah.
Different.
Oh yeah.
You're the same parent, but those child need vastly different lessons.
I learned that so fast, so early. When my son was about one and a half, he would jump on the bed and I would sweep his legs.
Of course you would, Daniel-san.
And he would land on his back and he'd be laughing his ass off.
Yeah.
I did that once with my daughter and she cried like nobody's business. And I went, oh, they're different.
Yeah. no kidding. I mean, that is something else. But you know what? To that point, you're different than how your parents were because of life. I mean, I'm so painfully aware of the life that I've built for my children to be different than the one I had growing up. But also, we had the internet invented while we were here in this recording group, late teens, early college age, right? We were young adults, if you will. And our kids were born into that world. And my kids don't have very many friends in the local area, like real life come hang out people. Most of their people are on Discord playing Roblox and different things with them, you know, like we do now as adults, right? Our conversations are not hanging out at my house, except for what time of year. It's in our Discord and stuff, but that's what they're growing up in. So it's a world that the perspective of how to go through it will be difficult for me to grasp. But what I had to do is understand the same principle went backwards of, you know, my father was in Vietnam. And, you know, his father was in World War II and the Korean War. I watched Desert Storm from the comfort of my bedroom, you know. We went through, you know, we talk about being Gen X. We went through a whole different way of parenting versus what we do now. That's the thing. You got to make it about yourself, in my opinion. Going back to that thought of what he was saying of just not, I want to be more. I want to be present. Then drop the want and be. That's the easiest things are the hardest things. It's like you think you have to do this or that and the other. You just got to learn to let go. And that was the hardest one for me to learn. And we'll probably do a Daddy Tell Me a Story or something in another couple of shows. But this one, like Random Kid, my wife and I joked about this constantly with our kids. You just got to aim for the least amount of future therapy visits. You know, that's not wrong. So yes, you have had some comments. All right. Random Kid's taking over now. Being a parent is trying to balance your kid's happiness while trying to teach them life lessons. Absolutely to a point. Honestly, here's the struggle of that. And Joe, Kurt, jump in here. I've recently realized my struggle was not necessarily trying to balance my kids' happiness while teaching them life lessons. My struggle was my mom was super hard on me without some balance. And so for my kids, I pulled back and went nearly as hard on them. And I'm starting to realize that I had balance of love and balance of happiness, but I didn't bring as much strength as I should have. What do you got? Have y'all experienced anything like that? Were you swaying away from how your parents raised you a little bit and realized, oh, I should come back more towards it?
I mean, Joe, I don't know how you feel about that, but I mean, I think that every parent says, well, I'm going to do things better than my parents did. And whether or not your parents were actually cruel people or anything like that, it has nothing to do with that. It's like, right. Well, they did things this way, but I think I can do it better. And that's the bravado of a young person, generally speaking. And I think that's good. I think that's healthy because that means
you can do it better.
Well, it just means you're trying to be different.
Yeah.
And being different is good. That's how innovation happens, right?
Yeah.
And so like in my family, I grew up with my parents yelling and in some cases spanking.
Yeah. You talked about that.
And I said, I'm not doing that. I don't think I need to. Now, that was the hubris of a young person. I mean, that was just, it was kind of ridiculous, but I did that. And so did I ever yell? Yes. However, like with Avatar, bear with me, when I yelled, it meant something because that wasn't the norm.
It's true. People who yell all the time, your kids just tune it out.
Yep. And so, and I think I mentioned this once before too. And so the outcome of that is when my stupid sister says to me, and I call her stupid because I don't like her. But she says, How do you get your kids to behave? Because she communicated by yelling all the time. And I said, oh, I tell them no.
Yeah.
And that sounded really stupidly simplistic, and I was being a jerk when I said it. But boiling the cabbage down, I told my kids no at the beginning. Like from the beginning, I had yeses and I had nos. And it wasn't could you please just do this? No. Do this. And then there were black and white nos. Because I still believe to this day that's what kids need.
Yeah. I agree. That's one of the major successes I have had with my now. One's a young man and my daughter's becoming about to graduate in high school. And the hard no's were far and few between. Mm-hmm. And so they've respected that. You know, when I come down and just flat out say, I don't like it, I'm not going to pass it, or I have my reasons, or whatever it is, there's no pushback on that one. Now, I also yell a lot, but I leaned into it and was like, look, I'm a loud person, but I want to build a world, especially for my daughters. I want to build a world where, or actually for all my kids, you know, and the daughters, I can see an overbearing man being in their life, but also there's people in their lives that bosses. And I want them to be like, you think you're going to intimidate me by yelling? That's all my dad ever did was yell. So come on. And I've talked to him about that, and because I had to work on it myself. But because, like you said, Kurt, the constant anger, and it was just fear and didn't have an effect. And it didn't have a positive effect where I wanted to go.
Well, especially if there's no difference, right?
Yeah.
If that's the majority of it. Random kid says, if you never say no, you're probably a bad parent.
Yeah.
Now, here's the weird thing. I'm going to actually take exception to that, because the problem is that it's easy for us to judge externally. But if we're in the heat of the moment as first time parents, I still believe, unless you have no empathy whatsoever, you're just trying to do the best you can in the heat of the moment.
But never say no.
No. I'm just saying I can't.
Oh, make you don't that judge the bad parent part.
Yeah, I can't make that judgment.
You're right. You're just a bad human.
That they're a bad parent. No, they just don't know any better.
Kurt, I don't know, man. I just.
But you're not with them 24/7, and so
I get it.
You're only seeing a snippet of those other parents.
Right.
But if they take a hard look at themselves and they're never saying no.
I see where you're landing, Kurt. It's a judgment of calling them bad.
So gotcha. I'm not even necessarily disagreeing. I just have a hard time. I have a hard time with black and white statements about people that we don't know. You know, and if you never say you're probably a bad parent. Well, I think that there's more nuance to it than that. And that's all, because look, I don't think,
They might speak a different language. Maybe they're saying nine.
And again, I have a really hard time even with the statement of never say no. I don't believe anybody never says no.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Stick that fork in the socket.
I want to. I like this though. This is something I very much focused on when the in-laws had all the money, you know, and so the Christmas and the birthdays were all piled up. I realized I didn't need to worry about stuff for my kids, which is very freeing. I didn't feel guilt about not being able to keep up. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm broke and you guys are piling on, but I was able to build memories. And anybody's been to my house, you see the Wall of Fame with all the collages every year for my wife and the all of our family stuff. And that's what we've done. Like, Disney was very curated to build lasting memories with both kids, you know, both sets of kids at different ages there. Cause we knew the likelihood of taking all of us, all six of us to a Disney park was probably once in a lifetime. And as of now, it's proven to be once in a lifetime. Not that we can't go back, and I've been back, actually pissed him off. When I was in Orlando last year with my business partner, and he's like, yeah, let's go to Disney. I ain't saying no, but but my son's 19 and going on 20, And so he's building his own life, and he has a steady girlfriend. If things go the way things go in life, they'll be married at some point. And now getting them to Disney as a family, that's tougher, right? So definitely, it's not about Disney so much as the happy memories. We do that here locally. I'm sure you guys did. I mean, that's the key at the end of it all. They don't talk about that that game or toy you got them back in 1982. Or, okay, Joe, that was a year that people were alive. So for you, 1992. but they will talk about the snowball fight you started in the kitchen because it was funny, or those kind of things.
Yeah. What Random Kid also said was you need good memory generating moments instead of therapy generating moments. Here's the weird secret about that. You're not going to know that they're therapy generating moments until much, much later. Like literally you're not going to know. And it could be that in the moment you think, oh, this will be a nice moment, or at best, you're not thinking of it as bad, good, or anything. It's just a moment. How that affects them long term, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, if my daughter came and said to me, hey, so I had to start seeing a therapist because remember how terrified I was at the amusement park rides at Disney World? I can't go near a roller coaster without freaking out now. Who knows that up front? You know, you just don't know. So,
well, and that's the thing too. I mean, I had some moments like that with my parents, and they just don't. I mean, it's not a thing. The thing that was the thing to you that was impacting you, and you drug around for your life for 16 years to finally deal with it, is that exact same thing. Kurt's like, what? I don't remember that moment. Sure. I'm sorry. What do you want me to say? With that, though, we are only halfway through the show and an hour in. So, Joe, you're going to drive however you're going to drive it.
Roll that dice.
I don't know if we're going to speed round this thing or what we're going to do.
Time for a commercial break.
Roll that dice.
Donate to your daddy. Patreon.com/Y.
You know, you can actually roll while he's talking. Right.
You're right. I totally could. You are 500% right. Or I could do this.
Once there was a lad, his name was Joe. He had a thought, a podcast show.
Still have like 10 speak pipes to get to.
All right. Have we done? Nope, we haven't, because it's your favorite.
Well, because you morons chose to skip it, they called it. No, you don't get to do any because your loving audience has called in 10 speak pipes. Now, one of those was Lady Underscore. So I think most of these are going to be bad dad jokes.
Devacate.
When I was a kid, I was dared to drink some food coloring. My parents found out about it, and they took me to the hospital. The doctor said I was fine, but I felt like I died a little on the inside.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome. All right.
Why does a chicken coop only have two doors? If it had four doors, it'd be a chicken sedan. No!
Now, I've told you guys, my wife doesn't listen to this show. Maybe if I load it on her phone for her, she'd listen, but she doesn't listen. Yet, somehow, because I make sure I don't really broadcast how much I hate these things, except here on the show, because, you know, Joe pays me to do that.
Well, and she can hear you from the house.
Maybe. But somebody on TikTok was like, oh, the dad jokes that keep me awake, and they did a series of them. And she, like, shoved it in my face, and I was, like, slapping the phone away. Like, what the? And she's just cracking. I was like, get out of here. And this stupid trend that my daughter thinks is hilarious, and will come show me. He's like, Dad, look at this video. And it says lightning strikes a plane twice, and it's stupid. Ka-chow, ka-chow. You know, I hate that so much.
Something I've always wondered is, should the creator of the knock-knock joke win the Nobel Prize?
I'm like, Devo, why?
I'm not gonna lie, that was a little painful, that one.
Regarding something Kurt said about smart devices, iPhones, before the iPhone, I had a HTC Tilt. These were the bomb. Ran Windows Mobile or CE, I don't remember what it exactly was, mobile, whatever, it's about the same difference. And that actually had a Google Map functionality on it, GPS, so forth and so on. And I used that, and I really thought that was just the best. Had a little stylus, a little keyboard, you pop it open. I love that thing at the time, until it fell out of my pocket coming out of a building, and that was it for that, and I had to move on to newer technology. The only thing I found is in the day, I used it to go to a location, and I end up in the middle of a field and being late to a customer who was very understanding about the whole situation, as was my boss. And I just, boy, the device was provided by my work. I'm like, hey, look, you know, the device told me go here. You know, you gave me this device for this purpose, to be able to navigate more efficiently. Well, it really put me on the other side of that town and in a field. So it was great most of the time, but just like today, not always.
Random kiss. That's no joke. That's just feedback.
That was the worst dad joke ever.
So if you go back, say, 2004, that was about the time my wife and I were dating, and we went on our first trip together. And in those days, of course, we didn't have really GPS on our devices. We had cell phones, but my girlfriend, printed out the MapQuest, all the directions, how to get here, get there. And one of our first outings while in New Orleans, we got to an intersection, and I'd been to New Orleans before. And I know the gist of it. I'm not incredible, but I know it well enough. And the MapQuest said to take a right. And I said, that's wrong. We need to take a left to go to the French Quarter. And she said, well, the MapQuest says it's right. I'm like, no, that's wrong. And she's being very insistent. And I'm like, all right, fine. We'll take a right, but it's wrong. And sure enough, it took us right to a dead end at a levee. And I turned around. And that was probably our first argument, really real argument that we had. I was kind of miffed. She was miffed at me because she was wrong. But anyway, the old print it out and follow the MapQuest. Those were the days.
And random kid jumping in. This feedback needs to grow up more and become a parent.
Waka waka.
Not to be crass or anything, but back on the subject of answering phones in bathrooms, some comments made during that by you, Charles, brings a whole new meaning to this.
So come with me, we'll go and see the Big Rock Candy Mountains.
Oh, yeah! Kurt still doesn't know why that's funny.
Well, no, you guys were talking about Charlie the Unicorn a couple of weeks ago, right?
I didn't see Matthew that coming. Charlie. I had no idea he was going to play that song. Oh my God, Devo. So Kurt, we were doing the Patreon, and I just went on this tear because Joe likes to take these stupid wireless headphones to the bathroom with him and have me in his ears. And I just, and it just kind of really got off in the weeds. And Joe, you're going to need to download that one and cut it. So you have the
not
audio.
To be crass or anything.
You cut the music out here. You need to get this next
answering
thing.
Phones in bathrooms. Some comments made during that by you, Charles, brings a whole new meaning to this.
So come with me, we'll go and see the big rock candy mountain.
Oh my God. Too much. All right.
So you were talking about answering the phone in the bathroom many years ago.
How many times are you going to play this?
As a contractor, there was a company in St. Louis, okay. Mechanical, huge company in Denver. Anyway, their IT director, I was working on an MPLS circuit or cutover or something. I don't know exactly what it was. But anyway, I needed to give him a call. And I called, I think his name's Mike. And I called on his number. And at the prescribed time, and the phone answers, and it's Mike. I can hear, and he's like, "Hey, can I call you back?" You hear the echo. I'm in the bathroom. yeah, man, just call me back. Got my number. All right. So later on, I'm talking to one of my coworkers, and he also did work for the company with their phone system. And I told him what happened. He started laughing. He said, "Oh yeah," he said, "this, he's done that to me before." So I called him, and he goes, "Bad timing," and he was like, "You know, you could just let it go to voicemail or just call me back." But yeah, it's kind of odd.
I don't get it.
Professional situation, but personal. Yeah. I know people answer the phone all the time.
No.
From the bathroom.
He's kind of terrible at these dad jokes. Your level of comfort.
There's the sandwich. So I didn't label them. So they were all speak pipes. And
you trying to say it's not just the toilets that stink, Kurt?
Oh my God. I also hate when you're in the stall and somebody wants to just talk to you, like, shut the bleep up. Do not.
You're in the wrong restroom if that's happening.
I found another book you guys might be interested in reading. It's called Pipes of Hay by Alfalfa.
Are you happy now? You get to ruin my story time.
No,
I found this little fact interesting. Why did they begin putting fences around cemeteries? Because people are dying to get in.
Joe, that is not funny. It is so. Roll the dice.
I still like Lost Limeys.
We'll get to that one. We'll get to it.
I know.
It's personal story time.
Put me to sleep, Joe.
Okay, I'll keep it nice and short just for you. So, my brother, when he was in college, he was very proud of how fast he could drive between Rexburg, Idaho and Kennewick, Washington. A trip that normally takes eight and a half hours. He has made that trip in 4.
I feel like this is still a dad joke you're building up to somehow.
Yes, his wife says he's too fast. That's why they have kids.
Like Kurt's stupid slapping meat joke. That was an hour-long story. All right, so okay,
the stakes were too high.
He's a super speeder.
Yes. So on one of these trips, while he was in the midst of one of the mountain passes, he got pulled over and given a speeding ticket. Or no, he didn't get pulled over. Sorry. It was monitored remotely. And so he got mailed a speeding ticket. And so he goes into court to fight it. And at that time, he was in college and he was an auto mechanics major, and he had a Volkswagen diesel engine Jetta, and he had completely revamped it and converted it to a gas powered Jetta, and he had souped it up quite a bit, but it was still registered as a diesel engine vehicle. And okay. So he goes in and he fights the ticket, telling them that it is physically impossible for a diesel Jetta to reach the speeds that the ticket claims he had.
Oh, my God.
And so he fights the ticket and they end up cutting it down to like a quarter of the fine They didn't completely get rid of it, but they cut it down to a quarter of the fine, and it didn't stay on his permanent record, or didn't stay on his record. And so he considered that a huge win, and he used to tell that story quite a bit about how he had swindled the man. Well, he didn't use those terms, but how he had gotten away with going. I think I want to say that he got clocked at 160.
Holy cow.
So, in a Jetta?
Heavily modified Jetta, but yes, that's what he said. The story probably exaggerated over time, but that's what he would say.
Great,
he
was clocked Scott! At
160.
He was going 60 and a 30.
So, yeah, yeah. That's one way to talk your way out of a ticket.
So Papa NASCAR lives on through Jetta Boy.
Well, so I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, and maybe I'll have to keep
that's
it
your
for
dad cheated in NASCAR? Yeah, but he did.
No, my brother had a race car as well at one point. It was very short-lived, but he had a race car as well.
What is this, Fast and the Furious Part 8?
No, he lost almost every race. You know,
yeah, you're Vin Diesel. He's the loser brother. Yeah, I got it.
He lost almost every race, and he was actually doing quite well in one race. And they called his car the tank because it was just this big bulky thing that it he wasn't going to win. But he was racing against this purple car, and the fans called themselves the Purple People. And he ended up nicking his back bumper, spun the guy around, and just ran right through him. And that the purple car was totaled. He finished the race. He didn't get first in the race. I think he got almost last in that race still, even though he started off good. But from then on, instead of being called the tank, he was known as the Purple People Eater.
Yeah. Wait a minute. So wait, what was his name? I mean, you don't have to give a last name, I suppose, but...
My brother?
Yeah.
Ken?
I think I heard a story.
No.
About him.
No, like, you like, didn't
he go off-road from the track at one point and crash into a farm, some farmland?
Nope.
Sure. Are you sure? Because I swear I heard a story about crashed potatoes.
What the?
I don't get it.
He doesn't get it. It's the crappiest, stupidest, worst way to get to a stupid bad dad joke. I hate both of you so much. Hate you so much. Kurt, I think I'm going to hate you just a little bit more.
Okay.
What the stupid thoughts that nobody gives a crap about do you have about Monopoly?
Oh, God, we're talking Monopoly? It's a terrible game.
See, I told you nobody cared about your opinion. Joe, what do you think about Monopoly? That's right. It's the best damn game ever.
If you play it by the actual rules, it sucks. No one plays it by the real rules. No one does.
You know why? Because it's a terrible game.
Charles, do you put money in the middle? Mm-hmm. Like most people that play put money in the middle.
It's not.
That's not part of the rules.
That's a house rule.
Well.
Okay. So
the rules happen is because the regular rules stink.
But that said, there was a summer where me and my two younger siblings played Monopoly a ton. Like we got to the point where we could start and finish a game within half an hour because we were just speed running those.
Were you using auction rules?
We were using auction rules. The thing is, when you play that many games, like we played so many games, we knew what deals people would do. So there was a lot less of shot down deals because we didn't even start deals that we knew weren't going to go through.
Yep. Well, and honestly, if you're playing that much, you land on a property, go nope, next, and just you can easily and quickly just go, I'm just move on. Let's just move on. Yeah. So Yeah, I mean, look, I play Monopoly Go.
Yeah.
On the cell phone.
Yeah.
And that's way better than the Monopoly board game. Monopoly card game, that deal, Monopoly deal.
Monopoly deal. Game. Yeah, that's a good game. That's real good. Yeah.
This is the difference between gods and mere mortals, because the game is not about the rules. The game is about how you live life and how you see the world. Because finances don't play by the rules either, Kurt. We have all kind of rules, and that just keeps the poor poor. But you know what I was always good at? Always doing what it took to win the game. And when you can convince people to play by your rules, guess what you grow up to be? A storyteller in the Rock Out of Podcasting.
And that's the show.
I love this game so much.
I got you,
Joe. These nerdy dads on social media. Charles at Rock God of Podcasting. Joe at Joseph_Ard. Check out the website wiseandnerdy.com. And as always, they may not be your father, but they'll always be your daddy.
And Kurt of VO by Kurt. Roll the dice. Roll the dice.
Roll that dice.